The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator...
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Tuesday, November 8th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for today's show. We got all sorts of great stuff to bring to you today, starting, of course, with the clever and perspicacious Cannabis Carrie. How you doing, Carrie?
Hi, Russ. How's it going in Portland?
It's going very well. I trust you made it back to Astoria just fine.
Nope. I'm still driving.
Still on the road. That's an amazing internet connection you've got in that
That's
car.
So Steve Bloom of me.
Yeah, really. All sorts of news coming down for today's show. Joining us on today's show, Drug Policy Alliance Executive Director Ethan Nadelman will be on the phone at half past the hour, and he's agreed to take live calls here at 971-533-7111. So if you got any questions for DPA's Ethan Nadelman, he'll be talking about his op-ed in the New York Times called Reefer Madness that appeared yesterday, as well as giving us an update from this last weekend's drug policy reform conference that took place at the Westin in Los Angeles, California. Also joining us here in studio is our good friend Todd Armstrong, who's here with Todd's Toker Topics. How you doing, Todd?
Not too bad yourself. How you doing, Russ?
I'm doing great. What's in the topic today?
Oh, the end of Prohibition.
The end of Prohibition.
Try to shove that in a couple minutes.
All right. We'll see what we can do with that. And before we get to all of that, though, we've got to get to the hemp headlines with Cannabis Carrie. So, Carrie, what's in the news today?
Well, we've got some more K2 news coming out. Another reason why you should try to keep your kids away from it. Also in San Diego, a ruling came down that let landlords know what they can and can't do with dispensaries on their property. A study coming out that shows which ethnic kids have the most drug usage. And also, we're going to go to an international story about a Russian pilot who likes to get high.
All right. Sounds very interesting. We'll get right back to that after this first break. Also on today's show, we always bring you some music at the 20 after spot. And for today's Daily Toker Tunes, now that we're past Halloween, I've decided for Tuesdays are no longer going to be Electric Tuesdays, at least for the next few weeks. It's going to be Holiday Tuesdays. We're going to bring you holiday music from now until the Christmas season and the other holidays in the winter here. So today we're going to bring you a cover of Tom Petty's Christmas All Over Again, performed by my brother Josh Belleville with guest bass player me. So we'll play a little Christmas music and every Tuesday as we go out here with Normal Show Live. Also, we are going to be taking a hiatus on the show for Thanksgiving week and the week after Thanksgiving. So there'll be a two-week hiatus. We'll be playing some best-of shows. Be ready for that. Also, remember, no show this Friday. I'll be flying to Atlanta for the Cannabis Reform Jam at the Capitol Steps.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that gives us these precious rights. Treat law enforcement with respect, and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search or seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215. Or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
What's up, guys? I'm Rory from Revolution, chilling at the Spring Fest, San Bernardino, California. Just chilling at the Normal Live. Wanted to say what's up and keep it green.
Weedmaps.com. I'm Radical Russ from Normal. My job as outreach coordinator, I travel every month, and when I'm on the road, I need a fast, accurate way to find the medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. So I turn to Weedmaps.com. Weedmaps.com has the best dispensary locator online or on your mobile device. Search by zip code or let Weedmaps find you, and in seconds you'll have the addresses, phone numbers, and customer service reviews for the medical marijuana dispensaries in the local area. Weedmaps.com also has a section devoted to helping you find a doctor who understands and recommends medical marijuana under your state's law. You can even check prices on the Medical Marijuana Stock Exchange. Coming soon, you'll even be able to find the listings of normal attorneys and chapters, local head shops and grow shops, and the best weed-friendly businesses. Weedmaps.com has the information you need to be an informed cannabis consumer. Visit Weedmaps.com today, a proud sponsor of the Normal Network. Inhaling deeply all the sacred smoke.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
In Missouri, a marijuana legalization advocacy group called Show Me Cannabis Regulation has been given permission from the Secretary of State, Robin Carnahan, to gather signatures for a pair of ballot initiatives aimed at making marijuana legal in the state. The group is aiming high with their ballot initiatives. They want to legalize marijuana for adults 21 and older, allow doctors to recommend marijuana use for medical purposes, allow the farming of industrial hemp, allow the state to collect $100 in every pound of marijuana sold, and finally, to release Missourians sitting in prisons who were convicted of nonviolent marijuana-related crimes. The group must now collect signatures from 5% of the state's registered voters in six different congressional districts to pave the way for the questions to appear on the 2012 ballot. The initiatives were filed with the Secretary of State's office in July and are nearly identical. One would create an amendment to the Missouri Constitution, and the second one, with the same expressed outcome, would change the statutes regarding marijuana laws. Yesterday was the first hurdle they crossed with the Secretary of State's blessing on the language of both initiatives. Show Me Cannabis Regulation is now seeking signature gatherers to help them get their plan on the ballot. You can find more information about the group if you live in Missouri, or maybe volunteer or donate by going to their website at showmecannabis.com. That's show-mecannabis.com.
I got to meet a lot of the people from Show Me Cannabis while I was out there at the Cannabis Revival in Joplin, Missouri. They seem to be well organized and very dedicated to this fight. I wish them all of the best of luck and encourage you to check them out at show-mecannabis.com.
And more information about the product synthetic marijuana. Three teenagers in Texas have now had heart attacks, and all three smoked K2 or spice product right before. The doctors are blaming the substance on the unusual occurrence of a heart attack in a healthy teenager. Doctors at UT Southwestern Medical Center said they had three recent cases. All three happened to be 16-year-old boys who admitted to smoking K2 within a few days or few hours of the cardiac incident. All three reported intermittent chest pains right after smoking the synthetic marijuana. All three were treated and have recovered. None of them had any signs of cardiovascular disease. Now, we told you last month about the 19-year-old basketball player who collapsed and died of a heart attack shortly after using K2. 2022. The report linking smoked synthetic marijuana and the link to heart attacks in young people was published online today in the journal Pediatrics. Also in the news about K2, a substance that was being made in China and sprayed on herbal concoctions and sold as potpourri to be smoked, well, the profit margin of the substance that is banned in many parts of the country must be going up. Authorities have now busted a synthetic drug manufacturing lab on Monday, one of the first operations found in the U.S. in Las Vegas. Law officers in Vegas discovered the lab in a Las Vegas home, and the lab is being described as a likely multi-million dollar operation that was producing synthetic marijuana along with synthetic cocaine, a product that they market as bath salts but sell in smoke shops. Police say the drugs were produced in Las Vegas, then shipped to Utah for distribution. Several suspects were arrested.
Oh, boy. You know, this whole issue with the K2 and the spice and these synthetic cannabinoids being sprayed, it almost, you know, there's a part of me that almost thinks that the drug warriors came up with this in some sinister think tank somewhere. Well, you know, people aren't that afraid of marijuana anymore. They're starting to think that it's medicine. I have an idea. Let's put out something that's fake, called fake marijuana. They'll associate that with real marijuana and they'll get scared all over again. That's why I hate it every time one of these stories comes up and they say fake marijuana, fake pot, you know, had a heart attack smoking fake pot, because what we've learned from framing and from George Lakoff, don't think of an elephant, is once you mention something, once you mention a frame, it doesn't matter if you're negating it. It doesn't matter if you're calling it fake pot, you're opening the frame of pot in people's minds, and you're associating it with heart attack, and you're associating it with all the dangers that these synthetic cannabinoids can truly possess. We need to keep reminding people that if you really, really are afraid of the fake cannabinoids, if you're afraid of the K2 and the spice and your kids getting a hold of it, why not legalize something that's natural, 5,000 years old, and has a much better safety record?
Yesterday, we talked about that study from Maine that showed that legalizing medical marijuana did not have an effect on teenage drug use. Well, another interesting study about kids and drug use was published this month in the Archives of General Psychiatry. They looked at youth drug use in relation to ethnicity. What they found mimics what is found in the general adult population for the most part. White Anglo kids were near the top of the list of kids who experiment with drugs and alcohol. There was only one group of youth whose drug and alcohol use was greater. That was among Native American youth. What they found was that in kids between the ages of 12 and 17 who reported using drugs or alcohol within the last year, 48% of Native American children had used drugs or alcohol, compared to 39% of white kids, 37% of Latino kids, 36% of mixed race kids, 32% of African American teenagers, and 24% of Asian Americans had all used drugs or alcohol in the last 12 months. Overall, 37% of teenagers reported use in that last year. The most popular substance used was marijuana, with alcohol coming in a close second. That study was actually just pouring through data from the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, numbers that we have questioned before, but it was conducted by the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Duke University Medical Center.
Well, this doesn't differ very much from what we see in lifetime use rates among different races and ethnicities as well. You know, everybody seems to think of these stereotypes when we talk about pot smokers. We think of Cheech and Chong, right? We've got a Mexican and a Canadian Asian an Asian Canadian, I guess I should say. We have the Friday movies where we got Smokey and everybody there, African American, right? We have the Harold and Kumars where they're both Asian. These are the least likely stereotypes of pot smokers. The most likely pot smoker is Jeff Spicoli, right? It's white folks. 3 out of 4 people who have ever tried marijuana are white. And amongst the racial and ethnic groups, if you just separate their numbers out, just about half of all white people who've smoked pot. And when you look at black people, Latinos, Asian Americans, those numbers go down to 40%, 35%, and 15% respectively. So this idea that this drug use is a minority issue is only accurate when we start talking about who's doing time for it. It has nothing to do with how many people are actually using it.
A ruling from a San Diego County Superior Judge was released yesterday that said a landlord in San Diego can evict a medical marijuana dispensary under city zoning laws that say they are not legal anywhere in the city. Judge Ronald Prager was ruling that Kimber Investment Group, the plaintiffs, could legally evict the MetaBloom dispensary from the building that the investment group owns. This is more fallout from a zoning ordinance for medical marijuana dispensaries in San Diego that citizens disagreed with and mounted a successful petition drive to put the issue to the public vote. But rather than make the city pay for an election, the San Diego City Council decided to rescind the entire ordinance, leaving no rules for dispensaries, making them illegal again. The move has strengthened City Attorney Jan Goldsmith in his aggressive stance to rid the city of medical marijuana dispensaries. Judge Prager's ruling said in part, quote, "Cities are the arbiter of zoning laws. There's no place in the city of San Diego, including the shopping center in Rancho Bernardino, where a medical marijuana dispensary is a permissible use. It is therefore illegal." Prager also noted that neighbors have complained about increased crime since a dispensary opened. City Attorney Goldsmith noted the ruling can ease property owners' minds since they have been put on notice by the California U.S. attorneys that they could lose their buildings under asset forfeiture laws if they allowed the dispensing of marijuana on their properties.
Well, as continues in California, we're seeing the effects of government failing to do its job to regulate what the people had voted into the law. We have a situation with Prop 215 where it was made legal for patients, now up to a million, maybe 1.25 million patients in the state of California, to use cannabis as medicine. They've got to be able to get it from somewhere. And so many of these localities, especially the further south you go in California, so many of these localities have just dropped the ball and abdicated the responsibility in coming up with reasonable regulations for zoning, for licensing, for permitting, for use, for distribution of this medical cannabis. They just kind of threw their hands up. We don't want to have anything to do with it. And now they're surprised when they come in and see all of these dispensaries that are set up with varying levels of professionalism and security involved in them. You know, some of them are fantastic retail outlets for cannabis distribution, the model that you would want to see in a legalized world. And some of them are kind of shady and on the down low, and you definitely don't want that representing what we consider to be legalization. They shouldn't be surprised by this because they just let it be a free-for-all. And this is another problem that we have in trying to go for legalization, is that we've made these half-step measures like decriminalization and medical marijuana. And then when people point out the flaws of the half-step measures, they'll say, oh, we shouldn't take the full step and move to legalization. Look how awful medical has turned out to be. No, medical has only turned out to be awful because we haven't gone the full measure of legalizing for everyone. Every single problem you can point to in a medical marijuana state, whether it has to do with access or too many restrictive requirements or having to register or give up a lot of your rights like your Second Amendment, every single problem with medical marijuana is a problem because it's prohibited for the other 90% of pot users who are too healthy.
And finally, a marijuana news story that has been circulating the international wires this morning, and it comes from the Moscow Times. A Russian jet airplane with 192 passengers on board was grounded on October 21st in the eastern city of Magadan. The incident is just being reported today. The reason for the delay in reporting is blamed on waiting for blood tests in the incident. The pilot and a female flight attendant are accused of smoking marijuana or hash right before takeoff, according to air transportation officials. It began with two crew members failing to pass a pre-flight medical check that raised the doctor's concerns. Both crew members had a high pulse rate, elevated blood pressure, and a slow reaction time. The entire crew was suspended, and the plane had to wait for 12 hours before a replacement crew was able to be rounded up to continue the flight to Moscow, a full six time zones ahead of Magadan. The pilot and the flight attendant have been suspended from work, and the case has been handed over to the Russian Federal Air Transportation Agency and to the Magadan Regional Transportation Prosecutors, who will decide if penalties beyond suspicion will be pursued. Flight violations carry a sentence of up to 3 years in prison. Now, last month, the pilot from the same airline, Yakutia Airlines, was caught smuggling, there you go again, synthetic cannabis, K2, into the pilot's cabin and admitted to regularly smoking the substance before flights and also selling it to friends. He was fired.
Okay. Well, I don't know exactly what to say about this. Nobody wants to have a pilot that's too high to fly. That's not something that we would necessarily endorse here, but what a strange story. All right. Thanks, Carrie, for those news stories. Appreciate that very much. In other news here, I wanted to bring up some research that I've been doing. Yesterday, I took you through a look at the National Survey on Drug Use and Health at the Substance Abuse Mental Health Data Archive. And as I was perusing through those variables, I had a flash of inspiration about the gateway theory. You know how they always say marijuana is a gateway drug and it'll lead to harder drugs like coke, meth, and heroin? Well, I decided to take a look at people who had tried marijuana versus people who had tried OxyContin, Vicodin, or any sort of analgesic pain reliever to see if they became monthly drug users. And guess what I found out? I found out that anyone who has tried, merely tried in their lifetime, an analgesic pain reliever is three times as likely to now be a user of an illegal drug other than marijuana than people who smoke marijuana. And when it comes to OxyContin, more than five times as likely to be a regular user of hard drugs like heroin, coke, or meth than someone who has tried marijuana. When it comes to trying marijuana, it's not as likely a gateway as some of these legal drugs. And in fact, trying OxyContin is 50% more likely to lead to hard drug use than monthly use of marijuana is. Check it out at stash.normal.org. We got all the charts there and all of the research data with the hyperlinks. Very easy to make the case. In hour two, I'll show you how I came up with this, so stay tuned.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? Have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is. Why'd I come
in? Tonight, I appeared on Jeopardy, and, well, how do I say this? I lost. Not only did I lose, I lost to this guy. That's right. I lost to Cheech Marin. Cheech of Cheech and Chong fame, pot-smoking star of blunt-burning films like Up in Smoke, Next Smoke, and Still Smoking. He not only beat me, he crushed me.
This guy, as Conan the Barbarian, on what's best in life, to crush your enemies and to hear the lamentation of their women. Cheech.
Who is Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yes. Cheech again.
Who is Al Pacino?
Right. Cheech.
What is Pillow Talk?
Right. Cheech.
What is Never Never Land?
Yes. Cheech.
What is Camelot?
Yes. Cheech.
What is a baster?
Yes. You're the winner today. Your charity will get $50,000 and Aisha and Anderson's charities $25,000 each.
I'm a doctor.
I'm a lawyer.
I'm a journalist.
I'm a student.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a representative.
I have cancer.
The outdated laws of prohibition are more dangerous than the plant itself.
I lost my scholarship.
I was fired.
20 million arrests since 1965. This is getting ridiculous.
Our prisons are overcrowded with nonviolent offenders.
We have the opportunity to change.
This is costing our country billions of dollars.
Making my family and I fight in a courtroom is difficult enough when I'm already fighting through chemotherapy.
There's no reason to be scared by tradition anymore.
We can stop this.
We can stop this.
We are the American people.
We can stop this.
And you have our support.
We are old.
Young.
Straight.
Gay.
We're every race and nationality.
And we're not going to give up.
You can tax it.
You can regulate it.
Apply age restrictions.
You can create millions of new jobs.
We can save our economy.
President Obama?
It's time for legalization.
Legalization?
Yes.
We
can.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public.
Today we bring you Tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electric music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and experimental. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, folks, we're calling an audible here on the show. I was going to play the Josh Belville Christmas song, but there was an uproar, an outrage over playing Christmas music before Thanksgiving. Rio in the chat room went nuts. Carrie over here in the backstage chat said, icky. Christmas music before Thanksgiving, icky. So I am responding like only I can to my live audience and changing up the set list. Then I went to Twitter and I found that NorCal Perps and Cannabis Cure posted an Electric Tuesday song for today, far too late for me to cue it up and get it up on the show. So I have gone back to the vault to bring you a song for today. It's not Electric Tuesday at all. This is holiday. We're still going to do a holiday song. You asked for it. You wanted. You said no Christmas holiday song, so I'm stuck with having to do a Thanksgiving holiday song. Here it is. This is Human and the Human Revolution with Stolen Lives.
Columbus sailed on a conquest for gold and new trade routes. He landed in what is now the Bahamas and was greeted by the peaceful Arawak people of the island. Columbus believed that his Christian God gave him the divine right to take the natives as slaves and kill them at will. When he returned to Haiti in 1495, he and his men raped and enslaved the Arawak. By 1497, through murder, mutilation, or suicide, half of the 250,000 natives in Haiti were dead. Columbus Day was declared a national holiday in 1971.
Groton, Connecticut, 1637. Over 700 men, women, and children of the Pequot tribe gathered for their annual Green Corn Festival. In the pre-dawn hours, the sleeping natives were surrounded by Dutch and English mercenaries who ordered them to come outside. Those who came out were shot or clubbed to death, while the terrified women and children who huddled inside the longhouse were burned alive. The next day, the governor of the Massachusetts Bay Colony declared a day of thanksgiving because 700 unarmed men, women, and children had been murdered. Thanksgiving became a national holiday in 1863. And many more atrocities would follow.
Nandinhutin Massacre, Pennsylvania, 1782.
Cheha Affair, Florida, 1818.
Battle of Bad Axe, Wisconsin, 1832.
Trail of Tears, 1838 to 1839.
Clear Lake Massacre, California, 1850. Kaibai Creek Massacre, California, 1854.
Indian Island Massacre, Humboldt County, California, 1860.
Bear River Massacre, Weston, Idaho.
Keysville Massacre, Kern County, California, 1863.
Sand Creek Massacre, Colorado, 1864.
Marias Massacre, Montana, 1870.
Wounded Knee Massacre, South Dakota, 1890. And the story
continues today.
You want a copy of that song for your iPod? Check out the Daily Toker Tunes at the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
We're joined also by Barry McCaffrey, General Barry McCaffrey, I should say, retired general, military analyst at NBC, and most importantly for this conversation, former National Drug Policy Director, very familiar with this conversation.
Normal Show Live, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
General, I'm going to begin with you.
Everybody's got a habit, some good, some bad, to reach the comfort zone. Some of the people have all kinds of people around, some people can't hang alone. Whatever it is, whatever you like, you're gonna make it through your afternoon.
What makes something funny? How does humor impact health and psychological well-being? How can you incorporate humor into everyday life? A concise, reader-friendly introduction to an important but often underappreciated topic in modern psychology, Humor 101 explains the role of comedy, jokes, and wit in the sciences and discusses why they are so important to understand. Psychology professor Dr. Mitch Earlywine draws from his personal experiences in stand-up comedy to focus on how humor can regulate emotion, reduce anxiety, and diffuse tense situations, expose pretensions, build personal relationships, and much more. He irreverently debunks the pseudoscience on the topic of humor and leaves readers not only funnier, but better informed. It's part of the Psych 101 series from Springer Publishing, Humor 101 by Dr. Mitch Earlywine, Ph.D.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORMAL, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Alternative Medical Choices offers healthcare the way it should be. Easy to access, patient-centered, team-based, and quality-focused. We offer a variety of natural, affordable healthcare treatment options like primary care, group acupuncture, massage, and assistance with OMMP registration. As a patient, you will have a team of experts working with you to make you the best you can be. Call Alternative Medical Choices at 503-288-5579 or check us out on the web at altmedchoices.com.
Legalization.
Decriminalization.
Lowest law enforcement priority.
Medical marijuana.
Ganja sacrament.
Consumer cannabis.
Industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that interact nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare,
the economy,
global climate change,
law enforcement in prisons,
immigration,
religion,
free speech,
energy policy,
and war. Now, we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal Show Live Cannabis Conversations.
All right, welcome back, everyone. And we are truly going to have a cannabis conversation today. We're taking your calls live at 971-533-7111 and calls via chat for our guest, who I'm very happy to have here. It's Ethan Nadelman, Dr. Ethan Nadelman from the Drug Policy Alliance. He's the executive director. Thank you, sir, for being here today.
Russ, it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Oh, glad to have you. Now, a couple of things I want to make sure that you get a chance to talk about here. First of all, you had a great op-ed in the New York Times yesterday called Reefer Madness that called out a lot of the shenanigans of the Obama administration. Give our listeners a little feel for what you had to say.
Well, basically, you know, the thrust of this thing was that the federal government seems to have mounted an onslaught against medical marijuana. It's the IRS saying that medical marijuana dispensaries have to pay taxes that nobody else has to pay, even if they're operating legally under state law. You know, it's the ATF telling gun owners and gun sellers that if somebody's got a medical marijuana patient ID, they're not allowed to legally own or purchase a gun. It's U.S. attorneys and prosecutors sending letters to landlords who rent to medical marijuana dispensaries, saying that they're going to seize their property, maybe put them in jail unless they kick out the medical marijuana dispensaries. It's the U.S. attorneys, you know, the federal prosecutors sending letters to governors and state officials, basically aimed to discourage the adoption or implementation of responsible state regulation. So I framed the op-ed piece for us basically as a kind of heads up, Obama. Here's what your federal government is doing. This is not consistent with what you promised when you were campaigning. It's not consistent with the good moves you took during your first year in office. And you're the person who's got to take action to do this. And I put the emphasis on his encouraging responsible state and local regulation of medical marijuana, because I think that's the single most credible point we have here. And so that when the other side comes back and says, well, a lot of these people just growing marijuana, they say it's medical, but in fact they're selling marijuana, putting it in interstate commerce, not sending dispensaries, that our response is, the emphasis here is the government should be encouraging, federal government should be encouraging responsible state and local regulation. Mm.
You know, but how much can we give Obama a pass on the idea that these agencies are running amok below him and he's not aware of it when he's appointing Bush's Michelle Leonhardt to the DEA? I mean, he kind of knew what he was going to get in that appointment.
Well, I think part of us, I mean, there's Obama the person, right? And how much in all the stuff he's dealing with, he has the time and attention focused to pay attention to this area, right? You got the drug czar is appointing to Joe Biden, you know, the vice president. And Joe Biden was an old drug warrior. He pleasantly surprised a lot of us back 2 or 3 years ago when he came out for getting rid of the crack powder laws that were so racially unjust. But apart from that, you know, he's almost as bad as my New York Senator Schumer, the California Senator Dianne Feinstein, right? I mean, so, you know, we don't have some forward thinking to whom the drug czar is reporting. I think that secondly, the indications we're getting from the people we know who are close to the leadership in the White House is that at the highest levels there does not appear to be any strategy going on at the various highest levels, the ones who are Obama's key political advisors either on the campaign or in the White House, and that some of them are kind of wondering what's going on, this federal prosecutor thing. What happened during the campaign in 07-08 was Obama was hearing from a lot of people, including some significant donors, that, you know, this got to change on medical marijuana, and I think that helped influence him. Now that he's in office, mostly what he's hearing from is federal prosecutors, that, you know, federal law enforcement, who are, you know, and their view is, since when are people allowed to make a lot of money violating federal law? Mm-hmm. And they don't like having their thumb, you know, some people thumbing their noses at them. So I think what's bubbled up is that law enforcement, especially after the Justice Department issued that memo earlier this year, basically feels like it's kind of carte blanche, let's go get them time. Right? And this is the time where we need to be pushing back. So we can always, you know, the man in charge, the White House, the president, he's got to be responsible. But I think when you're trying to really suss out what's really going on here, I think what you see is, A, federal law enforcement running rampant, because that's what it tends to do in America, and there's nobody sort of holding back on the reins. B, the anti-marijuana ideologues and all those guys, they never went away, and they've surrounded the drug czar's office, they've surrounded the others, they permeate the drug bureaucracy, and that's not going to change. Thirdly, you got to the extent there is any leadership at a Biden shop or whatever, it's basically don't make waves. And when they do something like appoint the former head of the, you know, Bush appointed a DA and renominate Michelle Leonhardt, you know, the night a thing keeps doing their bull. I mean, I think it's a kind of we've not been sufficiently successful in making them feel the pain of pursuing a wrong-headed strategy.
I agree with that. We're speaking with Ethan Nadelman, the executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance. And Ethan, you've been doing this for a long time, and you've got a background in education. You know, you've got quite a bit of education behind you. Tell folks I'm curious, how much did your background in mainstream education, going through universities and such, prepare you for the job you have now? Is there a lot to be learned in mainstream education? Do they get this subject there?
Well, there's the opportunity to get it. It's a great place to get it if you have the time and the ability. I mean, you know, the first thing that probably made a difference for me was going to college when I was 18 and starting to smoke pot and wondering why some people were getting busted for this, especially when this drug was obviously so less dangerous than alcohol. So, I mean, that was the first thing that kind of hit me. But, I mean, Russ, I was lucky because I sort of decided fairly early in my graduate school years that this was going to be a focus for me. I was successful. A lot of people don't know this. I got a security clearance. clearance. I worked in the State Department's Bureau of International Narcotics Matters. I wrote a classified report on drug-related money laundering. I got permission and I interviewed DEA and foreign drug enforcement agents in the U.S. and 19 foreign countries. You know, I literally had, you know, introduction letters from DEA, Interpol, and the State Department when I traveled around doing all this sort of stuff. And even back then, I more or less thought the way I do now. So there was an element which I felt I was almost kind of undercovering the undercover guys, you know? And then I wrote a dissertation, a book, in which I leaned over backwards to not take a strong point of view about the whole U.S. international drug war. I was writing that elsewhere, but I wrote a book where I basically said, here's how these guys do what they do, and here's how drug enforcement became internationalized. So I learned a lot on the historical and political and personal level about what the drug war bureaucracy was like. And in dealing with the international side, I was sometimes dealing with the people who were the more educated and more sophisticated involved in the whole drug war bureaucracy, because typically the agents who serve abroad are kind of a step above. But I have to say, also, I had the opportunity to do, you know, to spend a few years reading and learning and teaching and writing about this stuff. And so I had the opportunity to really, you know, when I started speaking out on this stuff in the late 80s at the height of the drug war, you know, I knew what I was talking about. I knew what I was talking about, and I knew how to say stuff that was scientifically rigorous and logically rigorous, and that nobody on the other side was going to be able to trump me.
All right. We're getting questions now from our chat room here that very interesting. Grand Poobah wanted to know, you know, we see the feds here oftentimes going after people in medical marijuana states or for other drugs with conspiracy charges. Oh, you're conspiring to make money off of illegal drugs. Yet the states are accepting taxes for medical marijuana and in other circumstances like that. So how is there not a conspiracy in the government that we can prosecute for them, on one hand, taking taxes for marijuana sales, and on the other hand, trying to bust the people that are doing it?
Well, I don't know what's the legal. I think your use of the term a conspiracy is right, at least in the figurative sense. I don't know about the legal sense.
Okay.
But when you see the U.S. attorneys in California or perhaps around the country beginning to conspire about how to shut down medical marijuana around the country, it is a conspiracy. It's a conspiracy, and I think they began doing it as a way to sort of undermine Obama's initial campaign commitments. And I think if it was true about just going after people who were growing marijuana and using medical marijuana as a kind of subterfuge, well, then that would be one thing. But that's not what they're doing. They're basically trying to stand in the way of responsible state and local regulation. And I think, you know, they don't care about the hypocrisy. I mean, you know, that's not their concern. Their concern is violation of federal law, and we're going to go get them. And the fact that they're paying taxes to local authorities, the fact that they're creating legal jobs and turning illegal jobs into legal jobs, that's not their concern. Remember, ultimately, for the federal prosecutors and federal law enforcement, they are not about public safety. They are not about public health. They are not about fiscal responsibility. They are about their own jobs, their own egos, and about the enforcement of federal law, regardless of the consequences to the individual, family, or the community. That's what's going on.
Yeah, we're speaking with Ethan Nadelman from the Drug Policy Alliance, and earlier in the interview you mentioned the money laundering, international money laundering going on. Oftentimes on this show we bring up Big Pharma, you know, as if it's an entity, Big Pharma, that's trying to keep marijuana illegal, etc. And of course one of the big stories going on right now is the Occupy movement, people that are standing up against corporate personhood and corporate greed. Do you see parallels and comparisons between Occupy and people like us that have been fighting for drug war reform?
Well, I think the similarities are basically that we're both opposing entrenched power, right? I mean, for Occupy Wall Street, it's about the 1%, and not just the 1%, but the greed of the 1%, the power of the 1%, the arrogance of the 1%, right? You know, and not all of them, right? But I mean, the ones who are, you know, in it for themselves in a blind sort of way. And I think that for us in drug policy reform, in marijuana and drug policy reform, you know, we are going up in entrenched interests. We know that the economic interests, the fiscal arguments are on our side, but that the entrenched economic interests in the prison industrial complex are on the other side. We know that when it comes to power, that all the people running for office, Republicans and Democrats, who want the guys in blue and law enforcement standing behind them and getting their endorsement, announcements that that's about power, right? Now, when it comes to the pharmaceutical companies, you know, I don't know how much of a player they are in all this. I mean, historically speaking, when you look at the origins of the Partnership for a Drug-Free America...
Sorry about that. The president just came in.
What's that?
I'm sorry. The president just walked in. Excuse me there.
Okay. But, you know, when you look at the origins of the Partnership for Drug-Free America back in the late 1980s, you know, the founder of that was James Burke. I mean, he was a remarkable guy, the chairman and CEO of Johnson & Johnson, one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies in America. And I think for them, and they initially took alcohol and cigarette money until they were shamed into not taking it, but for them, I think it really was about the pharmaceutical companies wanting to make sure that their quote-unquote drugs were distinguished from those other bad quote-unquote drugs. So there was a sense of the pharmaceutical industry being involved in trying to keep the focus on marijuana and keep their eyes off of the problems with prescription drugs and the legal drugs. Now, you know, there's also some evidence the pharmaceutical companies being, you know, having an interest in making sure that as marijuana becomes more accepted in society for medicinal other purposes, that it's pharmaceuticalized as much as possible, because that's how they make their money. They're not going to make a lot of money so long as it's sold as a kind of herbal product and such. But I don't know if they're the key force weighing in against us right now. I think a lot more of it comes down to the people involved in the prison industrial complex. You know, it comes down to the prosecutors who don't give a damn about the fiscal implications of what they're doing or the human implications oftentimes. It comes down to the police unions and the police organizations that won't even tolerate a debate about this and don't allow their people to step out and express an alternative opinion. It comes down, not so much on marijuana, but the rest of the drug war, to the prison guards unions and the private prison builders who are making so much money off of lock people up. You know, it comes off to the politicians who are fair, you know, being scared of being accused of being soft on crime or soft on drugs, and who want the guys in blue behind them. So I don't know that big pharma is our major problem as yet, although they may become a much bigger problem as we get closer to success.
Okay. And, you know, you just concluded the Drug Policy Reform Conference. This happens every 2 years at the Westin in Los Angeles was this year. I was there in 2009 in Albuquerque, and I remember when I went there, meeting all these different people. I mean, people from all around the world in many different areas of drug policy reform, from marijuana reformers like me to needle exchange people, Ibogaine people. I mean, every niche is there and represented. And I know that you're probably one of the most educated people on this subject of drug policy reform, but at this most recent conference, was there something new that even you learned from drug policy reformers out there?
Well, I mean, I'll tell you, were you there in L.A., Russ?
No, I didn't get a chance to go to L.A. this time.
Oh, my God, I can't believe you missed it. Oh, my, that's ridiculous. I mean, first of all, the L.A., the International Drug Policy Reform, it's a biennial, right? And
right.
So, you know, 01 it was in New Mexico, and 03 in New Jersey, 05 in Long Beach, 07 New Orleans, and Albuquerque again, and this year, you know, most recently in LA, and 2 years from now it's going to be in Denver. This time it was over 1,200 people there. I mean, it was 30% bigger than our previous biggest one. In terms of the diversity of the movement, I mean, you know, the early days of drug policy reform, and still to some extent of marijuana reform, you barely see any black people there, but there are hundreds of people of color, you know, black people, Latinos, others who were there. It was international. Probably 10 or 15% of the people there were from Mexico and Canada, but also Europe and Africa and Asia, Australia, I mean, you know, South Africa, you name it. So the whole idea of this conference really is in bringing together people from across the political spectrum, across the drug use spectrum, across the drug law spectrum in terms of whether they've been incarcerated or been enforcing these laws, but all of whom agree that the war on drugs is not the way to deal with this sort of stuff. And, you know, part of the pleasure I get out of this thing is like in pulling together that final plenary session, I always make it so that we can get different strands of the movement, and I go at the last minute just to go up to people have been raving about their talks. And so we'll have somebody, you know, somebody who's been incarcerated for 15 years and come out and has now made a life for themselves and is fighting the good fight. And then the next person will be somebody who's doing, you know, harm reduction in Vietnam. And then the next person was Sonia Sohn, you know, the actress who was on The Wire. And
right.
Then the next person is a woman talking about when her daughter was dying of cancer and how the use of MDMA enabled her and her father to have a breakthrough before she died in a way that was just incredibly powerful, right? And I'm, you know, and then I have Dan Rush, the union guy, you know, who's got getting the unions involved in marijuana, medical marijuana, marijuana legalization. And the idea is that the people coming to this who've been interested in marijuana are learning about all the other stuff right? And the people who are coming at this as, you know, formerly incarcerated people of color, and they're then listening to people talking about, you know, MDMA and its role in psychotherapy or reversing overdoses or what's going on in Asia or Latin America, you know, and then you have people who focus on the health side, the HIV stuff, and they're seeing this other piece. So the whole idea is, I mean, the movement building is about getting people to understand that they're part of something bigger. You know, when I give those speeches at the annual Normal Conference, and I typically will ask, how many of you care about just legalizing marijuana, and then how many of you care about ending the broader war on drugs? And inevitably, at the Normal Conferences, 70-80% of the people are saying they want to end the broader war on drugs. Doesn't mean they're saying that we should do the same thing with methamphetamine and heroin as we do with marijuana, but they are saying we got to end the whole war on drugs. And that means opening it up, broadening it out.
Mm-hmm. You know, I often make a point that medical marijuana doesn't go far enough. We have to legalize for everyone or the medical users suffer. I think that can be extended more broadly to say we can't just legalize marijuana. We've got to find a way to end the drug war on all drugs, or marijuana users will continue to suffer. And that's the way I see it, too. So, hey, I want to leave this conversation with a chance for you to express, you know, anything else that might be on your mind that our listeners ought to know about, any of the recent news stories, or even if you want to polish a crystal ball and make predictions for 2012 elections on marijuana legalization.
I mean, I'll say a few. I mean, the first thing I would say is, please, you know, for all your listeners, join the Drug Policy Alliance. Go to our website. Sign up for our email list. Become a member. Support the cause. Secondly, if you plan on being in Denver 2 years from now for the International Drug Policy Reform Conference. I think beyond that, I think that we can get to Obama on this whole medical marijuana crackdown thing. I think he's going to be hearing it from more and more people that this has gone too far, and I think we have to shift their political calculus so that things change. I think with respect to the ballot initiatives to legalize marijuana, it looks pretty likely they'll be on the ballot in Colorado and Washington State next year. They're both going to be uphill battles. In both states, you see slightly less than 50% in favor and slightly more than 50% in favor and slightly more than 40% against, which is not normally enough of a margin to win on election day because people get scared and, you know, all this sort of stuff. But I think we have a shot, and, you know, we got to keep it together. I think we also have to realize the importance of you know, it's the nature of political and social movements to get that the worst conflicts are among ourselves. But we have to always keep our eye on the ball, keep our eye on the prize. You know, inevitably in any political movement, you're going to have fights over girlfriends and boyfriends and money and credit and you know, strategies and tactics and all that. But ultimately, we're fighting essentially for the same objective, which is to end marijuana prohibition in America and to roll back the drug war as far as we possibly can. So I think that's probably my final words, Russ, and I want to just say also my thanks and appreciation for you. I think the role you're playing as a communicator in this area and your brilliant teaching on this, I mean, the reason I invited you to address my staff 2 years ago on this stuff is because you have a way of presenting this stuff like few people can.
Oh, well,
so thank
so
you
much.
For doing what you're doing.
I'll be glad to do it, and I'm sorry I couldn't do it in L.A. this year, but maybe in Denver in 2 years we can put something together.
Sounds good, Russ.
All right,
okay,
Ethan
take
Maven,
care.
Executive Director of the Drug Policy Alliance, thanks so much for joining us here on Normal Show Live. When we come back, we've got Todd Armstrong here with the Toker topic, the end of Hey, we were just talking about that. The end of Prohibition coming up here right after this.
Five of the last seven people to run for president and the last three winners have all smoked pot. Marijuana, the gateway drug to the White House.
Hey, Tokers and Tokettes, this is Radical Russ from Normal Show Live. We're proud to be the voice of the marijuana nation and proud to have you on our team. Now, you can represent NSL in your own Normal Show Live gear from handmadeapparel.biz. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel is one of us and a huge supporter of our show. He's designed the classic blockhead line of NSL shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. Worn by Radical Russ, Cannabis Carry, and Ganja John on the show and at live events, the designs feature their iconic logos and the It's Got to Be 420 Somewhere in the World tagline. Proceeds directly benefit Normal Show Live and HandmadeApparel.biz, one of our community's strongest supporters. You can also get your Cannabis Cure UK, Ganja John Show, Ivy Island Hour, and more gear from the Normal Network at HandmadeApparel.biz. Visit HandmadeApparel.biz today.
You are listening to PodSafe Music.
Hear the Mile High Normal Show from Denver, Colorado every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Pacific with replays at midnight. Also catch the morning replays Friday at 6 a.m. and the weekend replays Sunday at 1 p.m. right here on the Normal Network.
USVI Normal Go. Broke down barrier. Herb is medicine to. Broke down barrier. Boost the economy and. Broke down barrier. It's helping other states. Broke down barrier. Cannabis for legalized to. Broke down barrier. Join and speak your voice. Broke down barrier. We gonna change the law. Broke down barrier. We got to educate. Broke down barrier. Yeah, this is Nayora, you know. Bigging up USVI Normal. Working to legalize cannabis, you know, for the whole of the Virgin Islands.
USVI Normal is a nonprofit organization working to legalize cannabis for the use by the industries and responsible adults. Do your part. Join USVI Normal. Register to vote. Pass the word. Voice your opinion. You can change the law. Contact us for more information at 340-244-9179. You can also visit our website at www.usvinorml.org.
Here at Normal Show Live, we spend all week taking a serious look at the tragedy of American marijuana prohibition. But it is important to take a break and remember that we are a vibrant, diverse, and oftentimes hilarious community of people. So on Tuesdays, our friend, comedian Todd Armstrong, or Goob the Knob on Facebook and Twitter, joins us to expose the lighter side of lighting up with Todd's Toker Topics.
Hell yeah, I do it all in here.
I like that.
Welcome back, Todd.
Oh, how's it going? How's it going?
It's going quite well.
I enjoyed the show today.
We're on Countdown to Aisha Tyler, aren't we?
Yes, this weekend. Open mic tonight, and then animal rights fundraiser.
Is there a Thursday show?
No Thursday.
Damn it, I'm out of town on Friday.
Oh, double Friday, double Saturday.
I'll send you
twit pics.
Yeah, please send me twit pics.
Or hopefully tit pics of twit pics.
Yeah.
Hypothetically.
You tell Aisha Tyler that I said, Hi. So we've got a topic for today.
Yes, we have the end of Prohibition.
Let's hit it.
We have to discuss all good things must come to an end. And I'm going to transition with this. I will stop being Goob the Knob very soon. I was chastised by my great friend Jesse Joyce, the fabulous comedian who you should all follow, a headliner. He was on Last Comic Standing last year. I was... Featuring for me said, I need to stop doing that shit. I need to start doing my own name. So we're going to have to end that just like the end of Prohibition. Great decisions. You know, they get sussed out in the long run. And I want to take this as the view. We had a great transition. The last guest was fabulous. The view of Prohibition should be just like that of Portugal, like they were discussing in the chat rooms, the benefit of the masses, you know, harm prevention. That's the best way to go with this, because what's frustrating me right now is we all know the drawbacks of smoking cigarettes, but they're not banned because the tobacco plant is not somehow prosecuted because there's one issue with one product of said plant. And now they have banned those gross packs of cigarettes they're going to do next year, where they're going to show like diseased lungs and gross teeth and people smoking through trach rings to scare people. But they just stopped that because they said that violated their free speech. Because I don't understand that. Because what would they put on beer labels? They're not warning people about beer labels. They're not putting pictures of like a fist fight, a pretty faced fat girl, and a baby. Because that's all stuff that happens to you if you drink too much. And they're not gonna change pill bottles to show like a constipated person, a limp dick, and someone asleep at the wheel of the car. They're not gonna show that stuff. Because that's gonna violate this free speech. Because we know what really happens. We need to focus on the stuff that actually draws me. We know our future is full of diabetes, but we're not banning corn and prosecuting it and calling it the devil sex jazz weed of the eared crop Incans. Like, oh my God, it was the Mayans are coming next year and we got to end their crop. You know, we don't do that because it produces high fructose corn syrup, which makes 40% of our kids fat. More kids are fat than they are stoned. Let's focus on that, but we don't do that. It's not American to ban a product that was given to either, if you view it as God's earth, so be it. But I understand that the Christians of the world view that this is somehow a detriment to our social society is because they see the same people arguing against each other of how it's going to end with a prohibition. We don't need the business owners that want to make profit arguing with the ICP pans that just want to do it at the show, arguing with the cannabis goddess peoples. It's just, it gets distracting. We need to overstate. Just like when we're dating or buying a car or at a sushi restaurant, ask for more than you expect to get. We need to overstate what we want. We need to ask and demand for the 100% end of prohibition of buying the cannabis plant. Not for the reason that we're going to get that, not because it, we need to keep children away from that, is because we need to scare the crap out of the others that are scared of the truth. We need to return to back what it was. It was just a plant that people use for multiple varieties of things, and one of those things was to get high at the end of day after doing all of those other things. It's not that hard. We just want to basically, like, if we want to fix the government, we need to stop electing Obamas and Rick Perry's and these little slight variations in the middle. We need to elect Jesse Ventura to scare the fuck out of everybody. Not that he's going to be the best president, because Congress and the House and the entire judicial branch will keep a rein on a psychopath steering the ship around. But at least he's going to go in the right direction. I'm Todd Armstrong. Thank you so much. Don't really elect Jesse Ventura, but I hope you got my point. I'll see you next Tuesday.
Thanks, Todd. Fantastic, man. We love that. Todd's Toker Topic. Where are you headed to next, man?
Actually, just be in town with a whole bunch. Coming to Portland.
That's right. The Isha Tyler Show here at Helium Friday and Saturday?
Yeah, Friday and Saturday.
Oh, my God.
Come down and save some animals on Wednesday for the ASAP for the Progressive Talk Radio and KOPJ, 620 a.m. in Portland.
KPOJ.
Yes. I think I said it. I say it too fast.
Okay, whatever. Jeez, I missed the drug policy conference in L.A. Now I miss you and Aisha Tyler.
I'll
be in Atlanta, Georgia this weekend, folks. So if you're there at the Capital Cannabis Revival Jam, I will be there at the steps, noon to 10, Atlanta, Georgia, Saturday. For Todd Armstrong and Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Dang it on one more time. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.